This is another Saturday edition of Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel. And I'm Phil Kogan, asking the questions. Dialogue Conspiracy is an ongoing program which has been broadcast for well over a year now. And Mae Brussel is, as we said, a political research specialist who has been looking into the various events in the news. She started her research a decade ago with the John Kennedy assassination, and she has been looking into the political happenings and the ins and outs of Washington and the United States government and the political process for that entire decade. And she has come to conclusions, and she has been making conclusions about events in the news and what is now history for that full decade. Each week we look at events in the news, and she interprets them and tries to explain the whys and wherefores. And we invite your participation by mail and phone, and we invite your questions and your thoughts on the program, and hope that everybody learns something from this experience, and hope that if you come across something, you can contribute something to it. Hope that was
that's good, Phil.
A fair introduction to the program.
Yeah. I think one of the most interesting things about the research is that when you do 2 or 3 or 4 years of research into the political assassination, say, of John Kennedy, accumulating evidence of facts, photographic evidence, fingerprint evidence, ballistics, not the cover stories of personalities or what Oswald did or how he smiled or his relationship with his mother, but when you stick to the autopsy and the ballistics and you find out what a complicated conspiracy it is, and you begin to study the way it was covered up, it becomes a pattern to study other political assassinations, so that when Robert Kennedy was killed or Martin Luther King was killed, or the accident took place at Chappaquiddick, or the shooting of Wallace came along, it is easier to study these things if you stick just to the ballistic evidence and the fingerprints and the weapon ownership, because the covering up process is always the same. And that's what I study. I study the evidence of the actual murder, of who was in a position to kill and how many bullets were in the victim's body and that kind of thing. And then I also study the cover story of how the story is passed off that Oswald or Bremer or Sirhan were the lone assassins or even shot a gun, you know, and I study the contradictions of the physical evidence and the cover-up story. And after you've done this for 3 or 4 years, it becomes easy, and not courageous, but easy to make predictions on the future, because there's a set pattern of handling ballistics, of covering up, and the pattern was identical in Nazi Germany when Hitler came to power. And the pattern is used here, and that isn't coincidental, because in the article that I've just written, I show how the same people are manipulating a police state by manipulating the courts and killing off the various people who catch on to the system as being fascist and want to make changes in that system.
Okay, so you say that it becomes easy and not exactly courageous to make these predictions. You said when Arthur Bremer was arrested for the attempted assassination of George Wallace, you said that was part of an eventual plot to assassinate Richard Nixon.
Well, no, what I said was that the shooting of George Wallace was done by the same people who would eventually also kill Nixon,
okay,
but had done the other assassinations.
So now we see a short time ago the arrest of a man for being involved in a plot to assassinate Richard Nixon.
Well,
can you tie? Fit in with what you were?
We're going to try and spend an hour on that. Let me just say, while we're on the Arthur Bremer thing, Bremer had a trial last week, which we barely covered on the show before time ran out, where they selected the jury in an hour and 15 minutes, and one day the prosecution handled it, one day the defense, and the trial was over. And Bremer was taken back to jail. What was wrong with that trial? How do you know it was a conspiracy? A lot of people may wonder, well, what's the Bremer thing got to do with the current assassination attempt on Nixon? But I brought in just a few pieces of evidence that there was a conspiracy and that these things don't come out in the trial, because people who weren't conscious of the news or too young at the time of the John Kennedy assassination to put things together can follow the Bremer story and the Watergate story that's taking place now, right now, because it's in the papers every day. And in the Bremer trial, the prosecution, in order to show that he was guilty of shooting George Wallace, brought in a man named Mr. Frazier from the FBI, who also handled the evidence for Lee Harvey Oswald's case, who said there were no fingerprints on the gun. He never said that Bremer actually shot that gun or even held it. He said he could, but there was no fingerprints on the gun or paraffin tests on his hands or cheeks that indicated that he shot George Wallace. That's the prosecution. The amount of bullets that were recovered were never brought in to show that they matched. There were more than five bullets at the shopping center that went off, and Bremer's gun only shot five. There was no attempt to explain the multiple bullets that added up to 12 or 13 in the shopping center to Bremer's five-gun revolver.
Okay, so that, you say, is one example of an inconsistency or negligence in the investigation.
Well, it's a consistency in every one of these assassination attempts that there's been more bullets than than the weapon's been capable of shooting. Oswald, Sirhan, and Bremer's, I'm thinking particularly.
Okay, now another point.
Another point is that the bullets recovered from either the body of George Wallace or in the shopping center from other victims were never brought in to show that they matched the gun that Bremer allegedly held.
Was there not evidence introduced that they did not match? That
no.
It was impossible to match them?
No, there was no evidence to say it was impossible, but the point is to make a strong prosecution case. I think you should have more than the fact that he smiles.
Or well, that as his I mother understood is it, low. They said that the bullets that they recovered were so mangled that there was no way to make a positive comparison.
Well, I think the bullet removed from the spine of George Wallace could maybe be a whole bullet. I can't believe it's that mangled. The way they did the surgery and the discussion of the surgery, there is at least one bullet that they could have tried to connect. See, it wasn't that splintered.
Yeah, I'm not too clear on that point.
Well, that bullet didn't fragment all over his body. That bullet must have had particles that, when they removed it from surgery, because it was a fairly clean surgery.
Yeah, as I remember from the news report, they didn't have a good bullet, and they couldn't make a positive ballistics check.
Well, they not only didn't say they didn't say they couldn't make it from what I read, but they never said how many bullets they found or where they found them. There was no discussion
of
bullets.
I know. There was a total bullet of the number of bullets I don't believe was ever discussed.
Never discussed. Not at all.
But as far as matching them ballistically, I don't think they were able to.
Well, there's no question to match them if you can't find them. If you're not going to talk about them, how can you begin to match them? See, that the point of bullets was never brought up. The point of his not holding the gun or having fingerprints on it was brought up. Then the FBI closed the case after their prime witness in the prosecution, who said there was no fingerprints on it, couldn't say conclusively Bremer did it, and yet they closed the case within 24 hours. If they weren't sure that he did it and they conducted the case from the time of the shooting, why wouldn't they look for another suspect, particularly when they had leads? You see, there were other suspects. We'll go off the Bremer and get back to the plot to assassinate Richard Nixon and maybe wind up with the Bremer again, because this is in the news today. And I think if you understand the links of this to the new Watergate, the possibility of the links to the Watergate charges, you can follow this week's news until we meet again. When I spoke at Monterey High this June, I spoke several times to the classes, and the students were really responsive. So at the end of the school year, they asked me to come back, and they had a joint class, or about four classes combined, and we had a wind-up and sort of a summary of what was going to happen over the summer months and the convention in terms of political assassinations. And the school newspaper at Monterey called The Galleon had an article with a large headline over it regarding the class speech I gave, and it said, U.S. overthrown, Agnew becomes dictator. And it tells how I thought that Nixon would be killed in the summer, fall months, and the plan to put him into power would be done by the same people did the past assassinations. Well, in that interim, since I spoke to the class, Lewis Tackwood from L.A., the provocateur, has surfaced and given out more information about Squad 19. We've done many shows on that, and for those who haven't listened, Lewis Tackwood worked for the L.A. Police Department for 9 years, and he left last fall because...
Well, he wasn't...
He was a provocateur. He was a high rank.
Well, okay, but working for the L.A. Police Department, it was not in the traditional sense of the word that he was a police officer or something.
No, but he was one of their high-ranking agents. The men on the force all knew Tackwood. He worked with the criminal conspiracy section. He worked with the criminal intelligence unit with Evelyn Younger.
Was he an informer or an actual employee?
He was a paid employee of the LAPD. Sometimes he was paid for a spot job to inform. Sometimes it was a monthly salary, and sometimes he handled large amounts of money. He was partly responsible for getting provocateurs into the Republican convention, at which time they would be killed. And a new part of the Squad 19 tapes was revealed at the time that I had this press conference in L.A. last week regarding the article in The Realist that came out. And I'm going to read you what Tackwood said, and then I'm going into the New York plot this week about Nixon and the Watergate story. Tackwood said, "I'm not going to tell nobody what I've got on Squad 19. I'm not telling everything," he said, "but I'm going to show you some of it since it's starting to come out anyway." This is from the tape H. They're lettered. His Glass House tapes are lettered. He says, "I'm not giving up everything because, man, this is my only life insurance." You see where I'm coming from. He said, "I'm giving up two names. There's Martin and there's White." All right, now Martin was the code name for the contact. Now this is for the Squad 19 convention plans. And I'm going to tell you, he's CIA all the way. Are you ready for this? He was in Dallas when they got Kennedy. He left out of there for the Caribbean. And Martin is on the cancellation of the election some way and in on the concentration camp thing. He's a stone killer. This man was talking about killing Nixon and blaming it on the liberals, and then Agnew would walk in. Do you see what I'm saying? Now, the control, the man over Martin, is White. I only heard a little about him, but they say he's the money man. Nobody's over him but the top dogs. That means Nixon and Mitchell are the top ones. Or Mr. Helms of the CIA. Martin and White, that's all I'm going to give you now. That is my life insurance. Well, 8 months later, after he made this tape, after Lewis Tackwood made this tape, these two mystery men, Martin and White, surfaced in the headlines. In June 17th of this year, when the five men were arrested at the Watergate Hotel for putting in listening devices and so-called bugging party, James McCord was arrested, and his name, code name, was Martin. He registered at the hotel under the name Martin at the Watergate Hotel. When the police arrested him, he went to the police department. He said, "What is your name?" He said, "Mr. Martin from New York." And two of the men arrested, James Barker and Mr. Martinez, had the name of Howard Hunt, White House, and the code name White, Mr. White, in their pocket.
Now, I have to play the part of the skeptic and say that this was already in the press, and so for Tackwood to come out and reveal this now doesn't really prove much.
Well, the Tackwood book, the Glass House tapes, is at the printers now, and that went off to the printer in New York before the Watergate arrests.
Easy to make an addition. I've got to question the fact that he reveals these code names now. If he had revealed them before it broke in the press, that's another story.
Oh, well, I think he'd be sticking way out on a limb to put Martin, James McCord, and Howard Hunt. Each have been with the CIA, one 21 years, the other 19 years. The laws is in the legal bind. This is his life insurance to tell it. And I think he'd be way out of line to make up these names. Particularly, you see all the fuss about the secret money that is coming into the Republican convention. He said in October 71 that there was that $10 million fund for overthrowing the government and for then eventually killing Nixon. Well, April the 7th of this year, they mentioned that there's a $10 million fund that the GOP won't reveal the source of this money, that's a special fund set aside. Now, Tackwood wouldn't come up with just that figure. See, that came out a long time ago in a press interview. Tackwood gave these names. He gave the name White 8 months ago, a year ago, in October 71. He didn't just come up with these names. They're just being published new in the paper now because the name's broken.
He said that they were new.
Well, they're new to the people listening to the radio show.
Well, you quoted him as saying that these were new, that he was revealing for the first time, but now he was going to break some more.
Well, he revealed it to the people that he was writing the book with, the Glass House tapes. They had all this information. And when I wrote my article for The Realist and mentioned the link of Mr. White and Tackwood to the Watergate affair, it was because Tackwood made these allegations a year ago, and now these men have their name in the news. And I just think it's a fluke that they got caught at the Watergate. The $10 million thing is interesting because he stated that very early, and this figure comes in now. Another thing is that all the money that is surfacing, the questionable money at the Watergate, concerning the Watergate arrest and the Republican committee to reelect Richard Nixon, is all dated after the April 10th date, and that was the time when they decided to move the convention from San Diego to Miami, and that the four men arrested were involved in making reservations for provocateurs. And this is what Tackwood said Squad 19 was about. So there's more links to what, that was the theme of what Tackwood was saying, and it seems that all the money was being moved to Miami now, away from San Diego, the shifting and the banking. And Bernard Barker, who was arrested, his wife said that she didn't know how he was getting involved with the anti-Castro Cubans. Now he hadn't seen them in 5 years, and all
okay,
of a sudden...
Bernard Barker being one of the men arrested.
At the Watergate Hotel, yeah.
Okay.
So I think the Tackwood, I made the charge on the overthrow of the government based upon a study of who put Agnew into power and how he got to be the vice president from a relatively, in quotes, unknown person. And it's linked to the same people that overthrew Greece. And
is this going to lead us into the discussion on the Nixon
yeah.
thing?
Now we're going to...
We started into it.
Okay.
Got sidetracked.
There were two articles this week in the paper about an attempt to shoot Richard Nixon. And I'm going to take the articles, and I've outlined them for you to discuss them. One was in the San Jose Mercury, and one was in the Chronicle. The headline, Plot to Assassinate Nixon. Rightist... held after the alleged payoff. These two articles were hushed up very quickly. Has there been any follow-up in the news about this plot?
No, hasn't been.
Since the 12th, Monday, there's been nothing in the news.
Just the initial reports and then the follow-ups the next day, which are just a rehash of them.
Because, see, what I claim is that the gunman, the man who actually is seen in the crowd who does the shooting, has a cutoff between the extremely right-wing, and the right-wing has been involved in all the past assassinations. So this is another level of a hiring the assassin, and I'll go into the article and why I think it's important. And the news has made a blackout of it, but I'm going to write an article for it and see if we can keep it in people's minds, you know, as the trial comes about. Andrew B. Topping was the man arrested. He's 27-year-old from New York. Now, at the Watergate Hotel, at the time of the arrest, there were 9 men registered. They registered in May for 2 days, and they came back in June. 5 men were arrested, and 4 were not apprehended, or the FBI will not give out their names. Zodiac News Service called Washington this week, the Justice Department. They will not give the names of the 4. All we know is that we have the name of one of them, alleged Angel Farrar. Then they said there was a man from Kansas and a man from New York. Well, it may be a thin line that the man who has been stopped from being part of the assassination plot this next week was from New York. But as long as we don't know who the men were that got away at the Watergate, you have to find out if this was part of the chain of command, because Arthur Brammer was in Michigan with a man with a New York accent who said he was from New York. Arthur Brammer stayed at the Waldorf Astoria. Nobody was ever questioned or came up at the trial what room he had, whether there were one or two people. He had companions before he shot at Wallace, and he had inside intelligence information to tell him where Wallace would be at that shopping center at that time. But New York comes into the picture in the Brammer case, and it comes into it in the Watergate. And we're talking about Brammer said that he was stalking Nixon. He could have done either way. And the Watergate affair, Tackwood claims, was to kill Nixon. So because this man was in on a plot and is from New York, and the Watergate and Brammer involved New York, I think it's important to press the Justice Department to reveal the names of the 4 people. They will come out in the trial. They're John Doe's, and find out their connections. They went on, the article described him as, in quote, self-employed investment financier. He was well off. He lived in a high-rise building. He had a lot of money, and he appeared to be well off, but unemployed. Well, the cost of living is too high today to pass off that you have a lot of bread if you didn't inherit it, and you're giving $1,000 a simple down payment, and you're living...
Was that self-employed, not unemployed?
Well, self-employed, then we have to know the source of the... of who his account is. You see, in order to chase a conspiracy, you have to know who his account. Now, he kept hired full-time the Pinkerton Detective Services, which they went on to say for undisclosed purposes. If he's self-employed, yeah, I don't mean unemployed, but if he's self-employed, what office does he have? Does he pay rent? What source of income? Because we get back into the question of dummy fronts or organizations. Who is funding the man? Does his tax record show what his income is to pay his particular rent and his spending, and why is he hiring a full-time detective service? He's working with the Pinkerton service. Well, this is very important, because when Robert Kennedy was in town, and this could serve for McGovern too, when Robert Kennedy was in Los Angeles, the LA police didn't offer protection for him. They said he was just a candidate. And so a detective service, a private detective service, sent a man who worked at Lockheed as a maintenance man during the daytime to guard him. And now there's an allegation coming out that this was the man that shot Robert Kennedy from the back of the head. There's a movie going to be, it'll be out in about 2 months, called The Second Gunman. And I met the producer when I was in LA last week, Gerald Alcorn, Frenchman. And he's going to all the evidence that there was a second gun and that Robert Kennedy was shot from the back of the head. We've talked about this on programs, by a guard hired from a private agency. So as I study past assassinations, I have to read the news and relate, and this is why I'm sharing this one news article for the rest of the hour, to see how important it is not to pass this off as, oh, here's a guy who's saying he's going to kill Nixon. How funny. Because that one bullet would give all of you Agnew for president if that's what you want. So you want to know the source of his income, where, how much money he makes as a stockbroker, and what was the hire detective for. Now, the article went on, he lived with his mother and his five-week-old son in Manhattan. I classify that under migratory birds or moving. His wife died, we're going to go to that in a minute, 6 weeks ago at the hands of political extremists.
Maybe you should clarify migratory birds.
Migratory birds are people
It's a term you use. To name people who move from place to place, change identities, and turn up different places.
Migratory birds are people on espionage assignments who lose their past by staying in offbeat places or not keeping their usual home or domicile before they are assigned to do something or to make connections, even as cutoffs. They lose their past associations, and they're out on their own.
Okay, now let's apply to this.
So I feel that the article went on that he was living with his mother and his five-week-old son in Manhattan. But the way the living described, it's hard to tell whether he had his own apartment up till the time his wife died. She was murdered 6 weeks ago. Did he just move in with his mother when the plot blew and, you know, the baby is draped in an American flag in the apartment? We'll go into that, and he's living with his mother. But the way I research, I'd want to know what he rented before, and did he and his wife have their own home before his wife was murdered? Has he just moved into his mother's place since his wife was murdered? See, all of these things that most people read passing in articles, unimportant, have a meaning when you study the pattern of the past assassinations. Now, Mr. Topping had made a request to see Richard Nixon, and he was going to see him, he made the request to see him a week ago. And in order to see Richard Nixon, you have to undergo an investigation. Now, this is one of the important links. Mr. Nixon is in the most important period of his political career and also in terms of his own safety. He has 8 weeks before elections. He's super paranoid with that new $500,000 car. He sees nobody. In order to say, I want to see Richard Nixon next week, you have to know people very high at the top, like Mr. Hunt or Mr. Liddy or people. The man who was arrested on this assassination job was investment broker, Wall Street and bond investment stocks and so forth. That is John Mitchell's hangout, investments and stocks, Wall Street. This man isn't just an ordinary gunman at the level that you see when we talk about political assassinations. In order to even say, I will screen you for an appointment, he has to have something really important in the White House or good clearance.
Did his request go any further than just the request?
Yes, they were in the process of just screening it out. See, that's the important thing. If you write a letter today, you wouldn't get it to Nixon.
That's what I'm saying. Anybody can request to see the president.
No, the whole thing, the whole point that I want to make and summarize on this thing about the assassination attempt on Nixon is that he was considered eligible, and they were going through a routine check of him before he saw the president. And this is 8 weeks before the election. And
For what reason did he want to see the president?
Well, I am posing the question, because of the way the material is coming in, was he part of that assassination plot? Now that the other men are locked up in jail, was he part of the Watergate plot? You see, the Dallas assassination of John Kennedy, or the Memphis assassination of Martin Luther King, and the killing of Robert Kennedy in Los Angeles involved hundreds of people. And if a person is intent on 2 or 3 years in planning the fact that Nixon would get it before 72, they have second and third teams. But if this man was in any way related to the Watergate group, somebody would have to blow it now and stop it, because he then would be connected to the Agnew right-wing group.
What was the purported reason for his visit? Did he have some earth-shaking knowledge to share with the president?
No, there was nothing. You see, those are the things that bother me. It's what they don't put in. The fact that he was considered eligible to see him at this time, that there was a routine check, there's no mention of his intention of what he would do or offer, but there's no mention of who he knows. And I think it has to be considered very important that somebody has set this up and they're screening him out. So the question is, who does Mr. Dobbing know that has already gone ahead on the screening process? Now, the United States Attorney William Gray said, in handling this case, that an acquaintance told authorities that Topping was looking for someone to assassinate the president. The acquaintance has to be very high up, because Topping was meeting with people at a certain level, White House level. He's going to get in the White House. But some middleman here, which I cross-file under witnesses not called, blew the case at this time. And I think that acquaintance was forced to blow at this time, and they'll put it off to a later date. So that we don't know who the acquaintance is. He hasn't stepped forward and saying, I'm the man. Secret Service agent Stuart Henry had two meetings with Topping, and he received $1,000 as a part payment. Now, he hasn't said where this money came from, or there's no way of saying he turned in that $1,000. But the question I want to know is, was any of that linked to the $100,000 in Bernard Barker's bank, or the $10 million of the CIA money? Some of it has been marked and can't be handled or moved along. Would the $1,000 be examined by people and publicly numbered, so we could know if the part payment had anything to do with the Watergate people? See, he had to be stopped at this point, but everything is so secretive and there's such a news blackout that it makes me more suspicious, and I have to read the article more carefully. Because what if that $1,000 was connected to the Watergate money? There's every reason to believe there's a 50-50 chance, I think, that stopping at this point was absolutely necessary. And the way the social position of Andrew Topping and his contacts makes me believe that they had to blow it and make him be the fall guy and take the charge.
Okay, we'll be back to discuss more about the plot to assassinate Richard Nixon. We're at the halfway point now in Dialogue Conspiracy with research specialist Mae Brussel. Back in a minute after we pause to identify the station.